Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast. It is so great to have you with me, either listening in your car or watching on YouTube, wherever you are. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you get a lot out of today's episode. This is episode 17, and it's part two in my series about piano examination boards. And today we're talking about the ABRSM, that is the Associated Boards of the Royal Schools of Music, who are based in London, and they're actually the UK's largest provider of music education and one of its largest music publishers, and the world's leading provider of music exams. Can you believe this figure? They offer assessments to more than 630,000 candidates in 93 countries every year. I was blown away by those figures, so it's going to be fantastic to dive in and find out about how this exam board works and some of the practices and principles behind it, and how it could be useful to you in your studios. But before we do, we're going to just mention today's sponsor, who is the ABRSM. If your students are struggling with their oral skills, the ABRSM is an exam board that supports the teaching and learning of music in partnership with the Royal Schools of Music. The ABRSM offers a whole suite of digital resources to develop general musical skills and knowledge and help with exam preparation. One of their flagship resources is the award-winning Oral Trainer app for Apple devices, which offers an exciting way for students to practice their oral skills. Through a series of interactive challenges, pupils can learn to identify and describe musical features and differences quickly and accurately. The light version is free to download and explore, so head over to www.abrsm.org/Tim to check it out. And I can tell you, I've actually used and explored the app myself, and it is a great resource. Okay, well, I'm joined today by the Executive Director of Global Operations of the ABRSM, Tim Arnold. Welcome to the show, Tim. Thank you very much for being with me.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you here. And I know you must be, just having a look at your name and your title, it must be a very busy job that you do. And I'm just fascinated. What does a day or a week look like for you? What kind of things are you doing for the ABRSM?
Well, I suppose the exciting thing is that there's no one day is like any other. So every day is quite unique. But I sort of divide my time between the London office and then travelling, and that's to any one of those 93 countries, but with an emphasis on specific areas where we're either developing our work or where there are issues to sort out. So kind of a typical day might be spent in the office in quite a lot of meetings, I have to say.
I can imagine.
But also a lot of working with colleagues, and I'm really delighted to say also a fair bit of music still, which is important to me because I spent the first half of my career as a performing musician and a piano teacher. So it's important to keep that side of things going. And indeed, I'm an examiner as well, so I'm able to do a little bit of examining from time to time. When I'm traveling, of course, that tends to be pretty intense. On a plane, go to a meeting, go to another meeting, get on another plane, go to a meeting, and so it goes on. But I also do quite a lot of teacher training and teacher support workshops, and that involves quite a lot of demonstrating and playing. So it's a great job, and no, you can't have it, it's mine.
it sounds very full on, but I can see how the mix of kind of roles would keep you very interested and connected with students as well as teachers, and all sorts of different bodies. So it sounds like great fun actually. And do you get to Australia very often?
We do, yeah. We do run quite a lot of exams actually in Australia, and we always work in different countries through representatives. And we have actually a number of representatives in Australia who, in fact, all came together at our representative training conference in Thailand a couple of weeks ago. So we got to meet all our Australian reps a couple of weeks ago. And yes, I've visited Australia a number of times over the last 15 years in which I've been doing this job.
Yep, fantastic. All right, well, let's get straight in. Can you tell us just a little bit of the background about the ABRSM, sort of how long it's been around and where it started and how it came to be an exam board?
Yeah, well, ABRSM has been around for 126 years, and it first started as a collaboration between two of the Royal Schools of Music in the UK, the Royal College of Music and the Royal Academy of Music, who felt that the time was right over 126 years ago to be able to offer assessments to students who had not yet reached conservatory level, but who were wanting perhaps one day to get to that level. And this was to become very popular very quickly. But the interesting thing is that within 2 years of ABRSM's formation, already we started to work outside of the UK. In fact, the very first centres outside the UK were in what was then called the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa. Yeah. And in fact, quite early on in Australia and in New Zealand as well. New Zealand was also one of the earliest centres for ABRSM before it was called New Zealand, which is kind of interesting.
I'm amazed that they were so distant from the UK, the first two overseas places. How did that come about?
Those early centres, well, they were largely where there was a huge British connection.
Yeah, sure.
And then a little bit later on, places like Malaysia, Singapore, Hong Kong, which are now, in fact, some of our most popular centres, our biggest centres outside of the UK. Mm. And, of course, those early centres were all where there was a very strong British connection, but things have changed quite considerably over the last 100 years or so.
Mm, absolutely. And so what are the main goals, would you say, of the ABRSM?
ABRSM exists largely to raise the standards of music making, and we do that in a number of different directions. One is that the core of what we do, which is providing the graded music exams and a suite of professional diplomas, and of course those are all around trying to inspire and motivate progression in music making in any one of 35 instruments and voice. But as well as that, we also try to encourage development of musical skills by funding scholarships, either to the Royal Schools, and actually every year at any one time there will be 30 or 40 students from around the world studying at one of the Royal Schools paid for by ABRSM.
Right.
We also fund scholarships in other countries. So, for example, we fund a scholarship to the Hong Kong Academy for Performing Arts. And interestingly, there's actually quite a number of Australian musicians who've studied at the Royal Schools at the expense of ABRSM. BRSM. So,
well, there you
kind
go.
Of interesting.
Yeah, I had no idea about the scholarships and how they worked. And is that something that, given that there's piano teachers watching, is that something that they can put their students in for and apply for? Is that how it works?
Absolutely, yeah. The first step is for students to gain a place, an offer of a place, to study at one of the four Royal Schools.
Right.
And once they've gained that place, then they can be recommended for an ABRSM scholarship. And in fact, one of the unique things about the ABRSM scholarships is that we don't just pay the tuition fees, we also pay the flight costs and various other costs as well. So they are huge, great, big sort of undertakings, but nonetheless, it's a hugely important part of what we do to raise the standard of music.
Mm, and make an incredible difference to some students' lives too, I'm sure, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just to be sure, for those of us not living in London, what are the Royal Schools of Music?
Okay, so there's the two colleges in London, the Royal College of Music and the Royal Academy of Music. And then there's the Royal Northern School of Music, Royal Northern College of Music, which is in Manchester. And then up in Scotland, in Glasgow, there's the Royal Conservatory of Scotland. And they make up the four Royal Schools of Music between them.
Great, but you
the
guys sit independently.
Well, kind sort of. The yeah. Yeah, the connection is actually very strong because the four Royal Schools of Music make up our governing body, our trustees. ABRSM is a not-for-profit organisation, so therefore we have a governing body rather than a shareholders committee or anything like that. And that's made up of the four Royal Schools of Music, but also some independent trustees to make sure that there's a balance in the governance side of things.
Okay, doke. Well, let's start getting into the actual features of the exam board. What would you say makes it different to some of the other exams that are around?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing to say is that ABRSM is truly a global exam board working in 93 countries. And that is quite unique. There are other exam boards around, although, of course, not many, as we know. Interesting fact, ABRSM helped to form AMEB many, many years ago.
So there you go.
It was a very strong connection there. But actually, ABRSM, one of the unique features is the fact that we're working in such a wide spectrum of different countries. Secondly, all of our examiners will always come from the UK. So even though we might be running exams in Australia, it will be a UK examiner who will come to visit to conduct those exams. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is it's one of the ways in which we can achieve consistency, because those same examiners have to work regularly 3 times a year in the UK. And that means that we know exactly what their marking standards are, and we can make sure we adjust things if they're not absolutely perfect. Mm. So that's another very important feature.
Yeah, I've heard that is one of the things I hear around piano teaching circles is the consistency of examination standard is very high with the ABRSM, and I assume that comes through the training that you do with your examiners.
Yeah, that's right. The training is well, actually, it goes back further than that. The selection process is very rigorous. Sure. Mainly because obviously we need to be sure that those people who we're going to put through the training, which is quite extensive, we want to make sure they're going to come out the other end. So consequently, the selection is very tough, followed by the training, which involves initially sort of group training with a whole gang of people who are first starting on this journey. And that's residential courses in which our chief examiner, John Holmes, will spend a lot of time explaining the methodology, the way that the marking has to be achieved, and also a lot of time spent on manner, trying to make sure that the examiner is going to present a friendly, comfortable sort of atmosphere in the exam room.
So important.
Mm. Absolutely. And then the training moves on to in the field training, only in the UK, with real candidates, but with a trainer examiner sitting next to the trainee examiner. And that actually carries on for quite a long time during the course of the first year. And only when the examiner has finally done that and has got through a rigorous moderation do they kind of get their wings. Yeah. But even then, in fact, we continue to monitor very closely in the first year of solo examining. But thereafter, in fact, every examiner must attend a training conference every year.
Right.
Plus, every 2 years, every examiner is moderated. So it's quite intense, and it carries on all the time throughout an examiner's career.
Mm, sounds like a pilot's training almost. You're back in the simulator every so often. I was actually just talking. I was kind of alluding to training for teachers in my last podcast, which was about motivation, and how, right, you know, for a lot of piano teachers, there isn't any particular requirement to keep upskilling. And I was talking about, you know, pilots having to be retrained and physios and all that kind of stuff. And there we go. Yeah. Now I know that the ABRSM examiners are regularly retrained and.
Well, I think it's interesting. In fact, the examiners often say that the training they received as an examiner is one of the best training schemes that they've experienced. But it also enhances their own teaching and their own musicianship, because obviously you're listening to things in a different way once you've gone through that training. But I think it is the continuous professional development, which, again, instrumental teachers are so desperate for, aren't they? Mm. I think that's a really special feature of ABRSM. And the reason for it is because if we can't say that the standards are offered consistently around the world, we have no right to exist. So, you know, I think that's our raison d'etre, really.
Yes, Yeah, no, it's fantastic to hear the background of how it all works. And I remember, actually, you guys put out a little app where we could try to be an examiner a couple of years ago, was it?
Right, yes.
Is that still accessible, do you know?
Yes, it's on the website. In fact, there's now a huge number of different examples, and you can try out being an examiner, but then John Holmes will give the commentary and the mark, and you can kind of see how close you got to the official mark, if you like.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's a great teaching aid as well, because you can ask pupils to look at that and let them try it out, which, of course, in a way, teaching is assessing, and teaching and learning, there's a fine balance between the two. So it's a great teaching resource, I think, as well.
Absolutely. I'm going to suggest that, actually, to my students. So we'll make sure we find a link to that, and we'll pop it on the show notes page. That would be great.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's just talk about piano exams then. What are the main exam types that you offer?
Okay, so the core are the 8 graded exams, grade 1 up to grade 8. And very roughly speaking, they kind of stayed the same in essence for over 120 years, that the formula still works. And they basically consist of technical work, scales, arpeggios, sight reading, which of course is a graded test. And the music is actually written specifically for the exam, but we published loads of other material to support the teaching and learning of sight reading. The oral tests, again, you've spoken spoke about the app just now and lots of resources to help with the oral side of things. And then I suppose the kind of core of the exam is the three pieces of repertoire. And the three pieces of repertoire are deliberately chosen from kind of three groupings in music, if you like. The first tends to be around sort of technical issues, but it's usually a piece of music from the Baroque or the early classical era. The second piece is a sort of a maybe a slightly more expressive piece. It might be from the later classical period or the Romantic period, but it's a piece in which you get a chance to really demonstrate your ability to communicate. And then the third piece gives an opportunity to explore different styles. So there might be some jazz style pieces, there might be some modern music, some contemporary music, there might be particular music from a particular country or from a particular origin, if you like. So big mixture in the C list, as we call it, which gives an opportunity to explore different types of music.
It sounds great. And I've always interested in the number of pieces that exam boards require their students to play, because I know that there's an unfortunate situation where some teachers will only teach, you know, those minimum numbers of pieces each year. And I in fact quite like, I know Trinity and yourself, and there's probably other boards, just do the three pieces, which I think is great, because it means that only three pieces need to be exam standard. But that doesn't, of course, stop students learning 20 other pieces during the year.
Absolutely.
What do you say to teachers, just to kind of remind them about that they shouldn't be learning just those three pieces in a year?
Well, I often tell, I'm doing a lot of work in China at the moment, so I'm doing a huge amount of work with talking to teachers and trying to sort of help them see how ABRSM works as opposed to the local Chinese exam providers. And I often say to all teachers that an exam is part of your toolkit. It's not the whole game by any means. And indeed, if you were only ever to teach the three exam pieces and go from grades 1 to 8, you'd have only scratched the surface of music over a sort of 8 or 9 year period. So I think of the exams very much as being part of the toolkit, an opportunity to really focus on specific skills and specific types of repertoire, but that a true musician is born of a wider breadth of experience, and so the ability to do all sorts of other things is so crucial. Of course, the other thing is that an exam is only one way to perform. You've got lots of other ways in which you can perform: school concerts, festivals, competitions, and so it goes on. So I think it's really important. I mean, you're going to be surprised at me saying this, but I think it's really important to keep exams in context, and they are only part of the whole musical journey.
Good. Hear. I fully agree, and I say the same thing when I present and write posts and blog posts and things too. Just keeping it in context, it is an assessment of a particular level of operation. It isn't the syllabus of teaching.
That's right. Well, I often say it's a syllabus, not a curriculum.
Okay, well, I know what you mean.
It's quite a good way of thinking of it. You know, a curriculum is your plan of action for a year or something, whereas the syllabus is a measurement of your temperature at any one time, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that's right. And do you offer, so you've said the graded exams 1 to 8, do you offer sort of jazz exams or piano accompaniment exams or any of those kinds of things?
Yeah, we offer jazz exams, and they are the same kind of pattern, three pieces, technical work, although of course they are jazz scales, not the ordinary classical scales, if you like. There is a sight reading test, but it's a slightly different kind of test because it involves improvisation, as indeed do the pieces. Mm-hmm. And then there are oral tests, which again are geared towards the jazz musician's ears rather than the classical musician's ears. So we run a whole suite of jazz exams as a separate thing, and they're available worldwide. That's kind of one of our key things here, is that anything we do, we will provide around the world, and so that's crucial. Then we also run ensemble exams, so that's an opportunity for people either in the traditional kind of string quartets or piano duets or trios or whatever. But of course, there's no reason why that can't be contemporary groups as well. So there's ensemble exams. We run choral singing exams for choirs. And in other words, the world gets bigger and bigger the more you talk about it. But certainly in terms of the sort of different types of exam, essentially it's the graded music exams. There's jazz exams as part of that. There is a prep test, which is designed actually for children who perhaps only been studying for 6 months, and it's no more than an introduction to going into a room, playing in front of a stranger and getting a report straight away. And there's no pass or fail. It's literally just an introductory type of experience.
Sure.
And then at the other extreme, of course, we run a whole suite of professional exams for teachers, performers, and conductors.
Right. Okay. And I'll ask you a question about diploma exams in a moment. But sure. In regard to exams, where can we've kind of talked about where people can be examined. So, 93 countries. We won't list them all. It's pretty much in most continents. I'm gathering. How many exam sessions are offered in those places, or does it depend?
It varies from country to country, and it also on demand. In the UK, which of course is our home, we offer three series of practical exams each year, and then three series of theory exams as well, which run different times to the practical exams. That's the kind of base pattern, if you like, and that's being repeated in lots of other places. But in some countries, we run longer periods, but maybe for two sessions a year. So, for example, in Hong Kong, we run the exams right the way through April and May, and then starting in July, right the way through to November. They literally continue right the way through. In different countries, different numbers of exams, and indeed within a country, in different parts of a country, it might be that there are different numbers of sessions. And you can always get information about that on our website, because if you go to the ABRSM website, it automatically directs you to the local country page, which then gives lots of information.
Great. Fantastic. And on to marking, what does the marking scheme look like? Is it just a letter grade at the end, or is it segmented by in a numerical kind of fashion?
Yeah, the sections of the exam are marked separately. The weight goes on the three pieces. Each piece is marked out of 30 as a maximum. And to pass, you need to get 20 out of 30 for that piece. And indeed, that's a principle of ours, is that you need to get two-thirds of the total to pass that particular section.
Okay.
So the pieces are marked out of 30. Then the scales and arpeggios and broken chords, that section is marked out of 21. The sight reading is marked out of 21, and then the oral tests are marked out of 18. To pass the whole exam, you need to get 100 out of 150. And if you get 120 or more, we say it's a pass with merit. And if you get 130 or more, it's a pass with distinction.
I understand. Sounds good. I like that, because teachers can then see exactly where any issues are when the exam form comes back. So it's very, very specific. Yeah.
We also spend a lot of time with examiners really drilling into the technique of examining, if you like. And one of the kind of watchwords for us is that the mark must match the remark. In other words, the comments the examiner makes must tally with the mark that is given. But there's no point in writing a comment that says, this was the most wonderful performance I've ever heard, and then failing it. So, you know, there's got to be a correlation between the mark and the comment.
I laugh because we've all, I know there's lots of piano teachers nodding saying, we've had that experience. So it is very frustrating because I understand examiners want to be positive, as positive as they can. It's a fine line to tread between sort of giving positive feedback while being realistic, I guess.
Well, one of the things that we work a lot with examiners and teachers, in fact, is to try to clarify for everybody what the criteria are that examiners apply as they're marking. And the criteria very much relate to the kind of eternal truths of music, which we delineate as falling under concepts around pitch, tone, time, shape, and performance. So the comments, not necessarily something under each of those headings in every single box, but woven through the commentary, the mark form, there will be comments which highlight those sort of issues, either the good or the things that could have been better. So it's really important that the teachers are able to see that, indeed the candidates are able to see that and see, why is that 24 and not 25? Or, you know, why has that particular mark been given? Both positive and sometimes not so positive. Mm. But the criteria are always related to pitch, time, tone, shape and performance. The other thing that I think is a really useful teaching tool is that we publish the criteria for all to see, again, on the website, and that can be used as a teaching tool. When I was teaching, my wife's a harpist and a harp teacher, and we always use the criteria as a kind of a way of saying to pupils, well, where do you think that performance comes, and what do you think that should be? And usually pupils are very self-aware and able to say, oh, well, I'm I didn't quite get that note right, did I? And things like this. So the criteria are a useful teaching aid as well as obviously an assessment aid.
Great. And do you have theory requirements?
We run the suite of eight theory exams alongside the suite of eight practical exams. But there's only one point at which there's a link, and that is that we absolutely insist you must have taken and passed grade 5 theory in order to do grade 6, 7 or 8 practical. Okay. A lot of people say, why don't you say grade 1 theory to do grade 2 and grade 2 theory to do grade 3? And the reason is that there's many ways of skinning a cat. Lots of people teach in different ways. And so rather than sort of dictating the pace at which theory must be taught in relationship to practical, we do just make that single point of connection. But of course, what that means is that somebody doing grade 8 has at least reached a grade 5 theory standard of theoretical understanding. And we feel that's important. In fact, so important that we will absolutely never abandon that. There's a lot of pressure to, and you know, a lot of people will say, well, why do you insist on the grade 5 theory prerequisite? But we believe that's such a crucial part of learning to play an instrument.
I can imagine the pressure that you would be feeling to remove that, because I know there are other exam boards who have decreased the requirement. So it's interesting to kind of hear from you that the amount that you feel, how strongly you feel about it being an important part of becoming an all-rounder musician.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah.
And I think obviously it's important for, although you only have to do it when you hit a certain level, I think the reasoning is that, you know, you need to, as a teacher, be teaching this all the way through. So they don't necessarily have to do grade 5, you know, in 3 months, because that's not going to happen very easily.
We have caused ourselves a problem because, of course, a lot of teachers will only focus on grade 5 theory. Yeah. Being pragmatic and you know, trying to get things done. But ideally, yes, I think you're absolutely right. If we all of us can study theory and practical side by side to produce, as you say, the whole musician. And of course, oral the same, for exactly the same reason. You know, I don't think there should be a single lesson without some oral work in it as well. But that's not always easy. As a piano teacher, I'm a piano teacher, or at least I was a piano teacher. I'm sure you've suffered from the situation where another teacher of a different instrument will say, go and ask your piano teacher to do some oral.
or as the accompanist, it always happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. All right. So now tell me about the grade books. How long does a grade book last? The books with the music in it, that is. And do you sell them separately, or do they buy a whole pack, or how does that work?
Right. So you can purchase each of the grades separately, and effectively they have a shelf life in terms of the syllabus for piano exams. Of course, we also run, as I say, exams in 34 other instruments, and we also publish books for those, but at a different sort of time span. For example, piano, violin, flute, clarinet, some of the most popular instruments, those we provide and refresh the exam repertoire books on a very regular basis, whereas perhaps percussion or singing will be much less regular because there's not so many changes in the syllabus in that sense. In terms of how long they last, piano exam books last, if you like, for 2 years. However, outside of the UK, there's an extra year, so there's an overlap. So for example, next year we'll be on a new syllabus, so there'll be new exam books, but this current exam book is also able to be used next year as well. There's an overlap always. So kind of the short answer is 3 years in reality, but 2 years in terms of syllabus life.
Okay. And why don't you just keep the same pieces available for teachers to use the whole time?
Well, main reason is that there's so much fantastic music out there, how kind of stifling it would be to stick with three pieces in grade one forevermore, amen.
I asked the question very tongue-in-cheek, as you can tell.
But of course, it is all about raising the standards and exploring music. And, you know, it's one of the things that ABRSM exists for, which is to develop that sense of curiosity. And by publishing and changing the syllabus on a regular basis, hopefully we really do spur that curiosity even further. Also, of course, things change. Ideas move on, new pieces. We commission music sometimes to go into the syllabus. So we want freshness in the syllabus all the time. And indeed, teachers often will suggest pieces that they'd like to see in the syllabus. We'll put them through the very rigorous process of moderating the music and checking it's available and checking we can get the licenses to publish it in our books and so on. But quite often, some of those pieces will find their way onto the syllabus. At the same time, there will be other pieces of music which are kind of eternal favourites, and they'll come back fairly regularly. For example, 2 or 3 years ago in grade eight, there was a Beethoven sonata, which I played for my grade eight about 100 years ago. So it's quite a complicated business, the whole issue of choosing the repertoire, but we do really believe it's so important to keep it refreshed all the time.
Yeah, it must almost be a full-time job for a number of people to keep...
Absolutely.
Going. God, gosh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have manual lists of pieces not in books that can be examined?
Yes. In fact, if we take, for example, grade one piano, there's the book that we publish, which has a sample of three pieces from A list, B list, and C list. But in fact, the syllabus is longer than that, and you can choose alternative pieces, which you can then buy the music separately, and we say who publishes it and where you can buy it and so forth. So you're not limited to having to use those pieces in that book. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's twice as much music on the syllabus as there is published in that particular book. Again, to give more breadth and depth to the syllabus, to allow teachers to sort of adapt the music they want to use for an exam to the particular levels or areas that students have reached at that time. Mm. It, you know, it's putting people into a box if you say you can only learn three pieces. But if you can say, well, there's one of six that you can learn for each list, then different pupils will respond in different ways at different times.
Mm. So there's approximately three for list A, B and C in the book printed, and yep. approximately three of each again as a manual list that you can choose
from.
Yeah,
that's
I understand.
It. Yep.
Great.
Yep.
And of course, as we said earlier, you know, there's nothing stopping them you teaching your favourite pieces.
Absolutely.
That won't be examined anyway. That's okay. You know, that's part of the process, isn't it?
Let me share how my wife approaches this. My wife's a harpist, mm-hmm. and she will teach her pupils quite a wide range of repertoire. And then kind of near the beginning of the next session, she'll say, shall we do an exam? And the pupils will sort of go a bit pale and wobbly, you know. and then she'll say, well, how about we do this piece and this piece and this piece, which you've already learned. So you don't have to worry about that. You've already done that. And I think that's a really good approach to teaching, to not teaching towards an exam, but the exam is part of the whole process.
I 100% agree, and trying to changing that mindset as a teacher from always having your students strive to desperately get to the next exam level, which is kind of at the edge of their technical ability, to change from that to going, well, hey, we've just been studying for a year, you've learnt 20 pieces, 10 of them are at grade 8 level already, why don't we just go and sit the exam with three of them? Sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So let's quickly talk about diploma exams. And because I know you offer them, what are the main requirements for those?
Okay, so there are three types of diploma exam at three different levels. So it's complicated already. So the three different types of exam are diplomas for performers, for teachers, or for conductors.
Okay.
And then the three levels are what we call DIP ABRSM, which is the first diploma, which is very roughly speaking at the kind of level of the end of the first year at a British university doing a music degree. So it's okay. Kind of first year undergraduate in a way. Then the licentiate, LRSM, is kind of at the end of a degree, a bachelor's degree in music at a British university. And then the fellowship of the Royal Schools of Music, FRSM, the top one, that's the equivalent of a master's degree. When I say equivalent, it's just to give a rough idea of kind of where they sit in terms of what these diplomas are trying to do. So there's a sort of matrix of three types of diploma and three levels. If we turn to the performer's diploma, the requirements are effectively a recital. And so unlike grade eight, where you're going to prepare scales, sight reading, oral tests, and three shortish pieces, because the whole exam is only 30 minutes, in a diploma, you've got to be able to perform for a period of 25 or 30 minutes. And it's got to be a performance standard right the way through. So straight away, there's quite an uplift from grade eight. I think one of the problems a lot of people find is that they kind of think of the first diploma as grade nine. But The reality is that there's quite a big gap between grade eight and the diploma. As well as the performance, there's also a requirement to take a quick study, not a sight reading test. It is a quick study test, so 5 minutes to study a piece of music and then play it. Okay. So it's not a pure sight reading test. And then as well as that, the candidates have to produce some program notes related to their performance, which they then give to the examiner, and the examiner will then discuss those after the performance in a viva voce exam. And that will center around the program notes and the performance. Mm-hmm. So it brings the two together within the practical exam. And just by the way, all the diploma exams are recorded, and then they are listened to back in London as another double check, because obviously we're talking about a professional qualification here, which is going to be very important for people. It's absolutely got to be right. Mm. The teacher's diplomas, the sort of same sort of idea in the sense that there's a practical element and there's a written element. But this time on the teaching side of things, it's much more around teaching. So the playing will be, show me a piece of music at, say, a grade five or six level, play it, and then we'll talk about the teaching challenges as opposed to the playing challenges. Yeah. And then the written side of things is producing effectively a portfolio of teaching notes and discussing those in the viva voce part of the exam.
Okay. Do you see them actually teach?
Well, they will teach the examiner. So the examiner will role play a pupil. And so they actually get the chance. And of course, what will happen is the examiner will kind of do the typical things that will go wrong. So, but it will usually be pitched at a level comparable to the level of a diploma. So for DIP ABRSM, we're talking around about grade 5, 6 sort of level pupil. Mm-hmm. For LRSM, a sort of grade 8 pupil. And for FRSM, a DIP ABRSM pupil.
I see.
So the role play is quite sophisticated in fact when it comes to it. For the conducting exam, again, it's a question of conducting. So it's a question of actually having to organise an orchestra or a choir or whatever it might be, and then the examiner will actually observe the rehearsal. It's all about rehearsal technique. Again, there's written work that goes alongside that.
Mm. Gosh, it's incredibly comprehensive. I had no idea. I'm learning a lot as I go. And do you have many teachers who do the teaching diplomas, just out of interest?
A fair number, actually. I mean, it sort of varies from year to year, but there's quite a lot of teachers who actually do work towards a diploma. There's also another way in which teachers will prepare for this, because we run a certificate of teaching course. In fact, we only run this at the moment in the UK and then in Hong Kong and Singapore, but we've got plans now to move this online and to develop a modular type course, and that can include a diploma as part of the course. So that's a something that's sort of coming on stream fairly soon now, actually, within the next year or so.
You heard it first here. Okay. Well, look, we'll just kind of finish up with the last few questions. Are students able to enrol online, and can they get syllabuses online and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So all of the syllabus, all the information about the exams, all the sample exams, kind of all the information you need is available on the website. All can be downloaded. Syllabuses can be downloaded and so on. So that's no problem. Mm-hmm. We're only offering online entry at the moment in our major markets, UK, Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia. However, we're engaging at the moment in our massive IT program, which is designed to offer online entry and scheduling and everything worldwide. And we're hoping that's going to come on stream by 2017. So the plan is that by 2017, you can do the whole thing online.
Fantastic. I can imagine. I can't imagine how big the job that is. Actually, running my own website is hard enough. I can't imagine. I can imagine. What? How quickly are results generally delivered, or does that also depend on the location?
No, it does, but in a strange way, it's a sort of reverse equation, this one. It's quite interesting. In the UK, we guarantee that the results will be in a teacher's hands within 2 weeks of the exam. Okay. But internationally, it can sometimes even be hours, because it depends on where the exams are being held in relation to the local representative. Right. So if you live in Melbourne and the representative lives in Melbourne, the chances are you'll get the result within a couple of days. Right. In fact, we hold the results back internationally to give a breathing space, because one of the quality assurance issues for us is that if somebody is unhappy about the way the exam went, we want them to complain and to tell us about the thing that made them unhappy before they get the result, so that we can get any of those kind of issues about the light bulb blew up or something went wrong with my music or something or other, get those issues out of the way. And then when they get the result, they might not be happy with the result, the mark, and then they can complain about that. But it's a pure complaint about the mark. It's not bringing in all the environmental issues as well. So we actually do hold the results back deliberately just to make sure people have got space to kind of distinguish between any issues that might have taken place in the room as opposed to the issues the around them.
Yeah, right. Okay, and one of the hardest things for teachers, you know, who are considering perhaps trying out a new exam board is that they've been teaching for years, perhaps with a different type. They're really used to it. Perhaps they've been able to teach the same pieces for exam levels for 10 years or more, whatever it is. What advice would you give them about trying a change of system?
Yeah, well, I think there's two or three things. First of all, definitely go on the website and you can trial things out and have a look at things and see how it works. I think the second thing is, if you're seriously thinking about changing over to using a different exam board, take an exam yourself. It's a fantastic way of refreshing your own kind of way of teaching. And it's amazing how taking a grade two or a grade three, even if you might be the world's greatest pianist, it can be such a refreshing experience. And of course, nothing better for motivating your students than to say, I've done it. So I would encourage people to actually have a go at it themselves. In relative terms, the exam costs are not actually that high. We try to keep the costs down. As I say, we're a not-for-profits organisation. And what we try to do is to equate the cost of the exam to the bigger picture of a cost of lessons, the cost of music, the cost of buying an instrument. So relatively speaking, the exams are not that expensive. And I think it's a really good investment to take an exam yourself as a teacher. And that's the best way to kind of learn how they work.
Great idea. Really good recommendation. And I only did my diploma perhaps 4 years ago or something about that. And it was a fantastic experience. Just having lessons as well as a teacher was great. And just going under that pressure, just to remind yourself of actually what our students go through, I think is so important.
I agree. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so everything's online. What's the address? Where should teachers go to find out more online?
Same address as you gave for the app earlier on, www.abrsm.ac.uk gives the email, or .org for the website.
Great, and that will take them to their local area.
That'll take them to their local website, so obviously in Australia, the Australian site, and then a link through to all the various different syllabuses and the ways in which you can get information.
Fantastic. Oh, look, it has been so good to talk with you, Tim. Have I forgotten anything that you wanted to mention about the exam board?
I don't think so, apart from the fact that perhaps we're in a place near you. So if you do need more information, you can also contact the local. So do have a look on the site give us a phone call, and we can then point you in the direction of the local representative, who will always be able to help and give more information and indeed hand over hard copy things if you need them as well.
Tremendous. That's great. Well, look, again, thank you very much for your time. We'll put all the links and the information that we've talked about today at timtopham.com/episode17, so people can easily find out more information. But look, it's just been a real pleasure finding out more about the ABRSM. Hopefully our paths will cross at some stage, at some place, musically around the world.
I'm sure they will. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Tim. Really appreciate it.
Okay.
And I'll look forward to seeing everyone else and in my next episode in just a week's time. Thank you very much for watching, and I look forward to catching all of you later. See ya.